Blog Talk Radio.
Muscle aches, rashes.
To find an answer.
Hair loss. I'm so tired.
You need to ask your doctor the right question.
Could I have lupus?
For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keyes, or you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. And now I'm on Instagram. Yeah, check me out there. Lots of cool pictures. You guys know I do giveaways, so if you tag me in a photo, you could win a prize. And, again, I encourage you to follow on Twitter, Facebook, and there are also announcements about giveaways there. I'll be giving away, actually, some books today, so you guys better stay tuned. I'm not going to tell you how you're going to win, but you just got to stay tuned. I just want to say thank you, too, for all your support. I've been doing this show for 6 years now, and you guys have been awesome, the audience calling in, you know, writing, listening, I guess sharing with friends because we're past 1 million downloads or, you know, or more. So thank you for your support, and I'm just really blessed for the you guys, the listeners, but also for the guests I've had on the show. Again, just want to say thank you. Well, today we have a phenomenal writer, professor, mom, filmmaker, coordinator of other writers' readings, all types of things she does. She has a lot of hats she wears. But today we're going to be talking about her novel, Into the Go Slow, and her name is Brigette M. Davis. Good morning, Brigette.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning.
Well, thank you so much for calling this morning, and thank you for writing this beautiful novel.
Oh, well, thank you for having me on the show. I'm really happy to do it.
There's so many layers to this book, as I mentioned before we even started. We can't even go into all the different aspects, you know, from, you know, the ethnic issues and the feminist issues, all types of things, political, music, wow. So we're going to hit on a couple things this morning. Actually, let's talk about the music. The music is awesome.
Thank you. Oh, my God,
so many memories. I actually listened to the soundtrack as I was reading the book. So why don't you talk to the audience about, but I'm saying music. I know what I'm talking about. They don't know what I'm talking about. So why don't you explain what I'm talking
right.
about, the music.
Well, the story takes place in the 80s, and that was an absolutely wonderful, rich musical period in our culture, right? And so it gave me an opportunity to really draw on all these amazing and really powerful artists who were out making, you know, great songs. And because this is a novel that's set on two continents, it gave me a chance to draw upon the biggest African musician in the 80s, which, of course, Fela. And so I love the ability to really celebrate music, you know, from both American artists and from African ones. And, you know, honestly, I'll tell you, because I grew up in Detroit during the rich period of Motown and beyond, I guess in my mind, you know, there's always a soundtrack to your life.
Yes.
And so that was really ultimately what I was trying to capture. These songs helped to define the characters as well as the period. So, yeah,
oh,
the
my
music
God.
Is so vital to me. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I was like, oh, no, yes, oh, my God, yes. I just was screaming, like, I'm reading the book. And then my mom's like, what are you doing? I thought you were reading. Yes, I'm listening to the music, you know. And it's like Le Freak and Hotel California. I'm familiar with Fela, but some of the songs, Zombie, oh, my God. So
yes.
It was just for me, I was there. And
great.
To listen to it while reading the book was a great ambiance. I would encourage, I mean, some people may not be able to read and listen to music, but for me it was awesome. Even though, you know, the songs may have been coming in at different points, it didn't matter. It just took me back, like to that, where was I when that song was playing. Like, I remember platform shoes, different things, just where I can, the smells, you know. So it was a great, you know, great idea to, in a sense, have a soundtrack, if you will, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so happy to hear that you did that. I think that's fantastic. That was my hope, you know, that people would see the soundtrack as, like, you know, a kind of addendum to the story, and would either, mm-hmm. as you've done, listen to it while you read the book. That's amazing. I'm so happy to hear
yeah.
that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now the book focuses on two sisters. I mean, mm-hmm. there are three in the book, but the main two are Ella and Angie. And unfortunately, well, let's see, do I want to give this away?
Yeah, I tell that part very early, so you in the story,
yeah, that's
so
true.
You're not giving too
yeah,
much away.
Yeah, that's true, right. Yeah, so the older sister dies, and the younger
yeah.
sister's trying to basically find out what happened or what's going on, and she's also trying to find out who she is, you know, and so you bridge that by sending her back to Nigeria, which is where her older sister passed away. So you've bridged these continents. But let's talk about this sister. I have a stepsister. Do you have any sisters?
Mm-hmm. I do, yeah.
Yeah.
The sister
yes,
relationship
has one that
so
passed,
unique,
right?
Isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I see the you dedicate the book to her. I didn't know if you had any others, but it's very unique. It's different than the brother, because I have a brother. And,
oh, it's not the same at all, is it?
It's not. It's mm-hmm. it's very different. And then how they interact with the mother, that
mm-hmm.
was very honest. And I thought that was a very honest the way you laid that out, the relationship. I don't know
mm-hmm.
if other people, when they read it, will feel that way, but I felt everybody has their role.
Yes. That's
and,
how it happens in the family constellation, right? We all sort
yes.
of settle into a role.
Yes, and that was great. I really appreciated that because I thought that was so truthful and honest. It wasn't like made up, like everybody's the same, all the sisters the same, they all get along with mom the same, they all get along with that. It doesn't work like that because you all come into the parents' lives at different times.
Exactly.
If you will.
Exactly.
You
yeah.
see? Yeah.
Some people
yeah.
say that we're all born into a different family.
Yes, I think in a way we are because my
mm-hmm.
brother and I have a different relationship and we were at our parents were at different stages in their lives. And my stepsister has a completely different view of the whole the family dynamic and even different memories of same events. Like, I'm like, no, that didn't happen. Yes, you blah, 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 blah. She's like, I'm like, what are you talking about? Then I had to call my grandmother and verify, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, no.
Right.
So that was great. It was really sad. She was really mourning. She was depressed. I felt like Angie was depressed.
Yes, yes. Angie was stuck in her life, and I wanted to really explore what I thought was a much truer experience of someone who not only was getting over the loss of her sister, but also at this precipice in her life. You know, you graduate from college, and you're supposed to be prepared to go out in the world and, you know, really achieve and conquer. And often it's really the opposite. I'm a professor. I teach students and have done it for many years. How many times have students said to me, oh, my God, I'm a senior, I'm terrified. You know, you're not really, it's so young when you look back and think about it, 21, 22, you don't really understand the pressure is intense, and you're not sure yet. You're just so unsteady. And so I wanted to really capture that for this African-American woman who was in this period in our history in the 80s trying to figure out, am I like Cosby Kid? Am I going to be a Buppy? Am I going to be a revolutionary like my sister?
Mm-hmm.
I really don't even know who I am, how to be black in the world, what's next for me, and I'm really still mourning. 4 years later, I'm still mourning the loss of my sister. So she had all of these reasons to be stuck in her life, you know, what you
yes.
call depressed. I think you're right. I think that's the right word. She was depressed.
Yes. I think she was depressed. I mean, people, depression has different faces, but I think that long, I can't think of the word at the moment, missing my tongue, but it was over such a long period of time. And I know people who've lost their mother, and it takes them several years. I've had several girlfriends who've lost their mothers in recent years, and it took them like 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm. I mean, mourning and grief,
yes.
You can't put a time frame on that.
Right. Yeah, and everybody's different. So she goes to Africa to try to unravel, as you say, what's going on. But I think also, like you said, she's in a precipice of her life, the beginning of her life. So where is she going? So she's ending one thing, but she's trying to begin another thing.
Right.
Also now you have a lot of this issue, which you mentioned just now, about how to be Black.
Yes.
How to be African, even. Not just how to be Black. You know, you think the word Black, you think America. But also, when you go to Nigeria, you bring up the issue of how to be Nigerian. Because that is, you poke the bear, so to speak. You know, what's the proper way to behave? And then, what's the proper way to behave as a Black American in Nigeria?
Yeah, that's pretty deep.
There was not a protocol, obviously. We didn't know about this.
Yeah. You know, when you're writing, I know this is true for me and probably most writers, I wanted to capture so many different things in the book, and I really wanted it to be layered and complex, and because life is that way, right? And I often feel that when you see Black lives depicted, they seem a little too simplistic. And in my mind, if anyone should have a complex life, it should be an African American. I mean, we have all kinds of layers of complication and things we have to consider that, you know, people of the larger culture do not. And one of them is, how will I move through the world with this Black skin? You know, we kind of consciously
are
unconscious.
And our skins are different. Our skins are different colors. What people don't realize, I think, sometimes they, when they think of Africa, they think dark, and that
and
can mean anything.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
Yeah. I was just going to say, even that is really a misnomer. I mean, Africa is a continent with 55 countries, I believe, and in each one you have people from myriad tribes and ethnicities and backgrounds speaking myriad languages. So there is just no way to generalize about people who live on the continent. And even in Nigeria, it was important to me to show people who were from Lagos, which is in the south of the country, and then I really wanted to take the reader to another part of the country, completely different, Kano, in the north, which has people who don't resemble the Nigerians in the southern region at all. You know, they're very different physically and with different religions, and, you know, they have a different faith and different culture, really. And so that was, you know, I was like, I want people to understand the continent in a way that isn't always depicted when you read about it. And you see an African-American going to Africa, you always think, oh, you know, this person's going to find their roots. But it's so much more than that. There's a contemporary culture there.
Right, you do mention that. Let's talk about this issue again, staying on this issue of what it means to be Black, because I think that's such an important issue. And that Ella is a Buddhist. She's Chani, and I thought that was so crazy because I was raised Chani Namyoho Renge-kyo.
Were you? That's great.
For 19 years. So I'm half Baptist and I'm half Buddhist.
And that's not unusual.
But it was very unusual as a Black person who I don't have the church experience. Like, I had church I could count on my hand, okay?
So
when I grew up and I'm in my, you know, college years and Black people are talking about, oh, yeah, that church, this and that, and then I got old, I'm sitting there like, I don't have that experience. And I would not speak on that I didn't have because I would be scared because then people look at what? What are you? And, like, twitch their nose and everything. And it was like, but I'm still Black.
of course.
But I was like an alien, I felt.
Well, the thing I want to say, I mean, that is a great anecdote. I'm really happy to hear that, because I think that there are more outliers in the Black community than we realize. So you felt unique, and then you read about a similar character in my book, because there are many, many people who didn't have what we consider a classic or typical African-American experience. And yet we're all Black. You know, we're all part of this culture. But what gets depicted, what we come to understand, is always very limited and limiting. And I wanted to say, look, you know, there are also ways to be Black. And there are even in the same family.
Mm-hmm.
So I was definitely trying to, like, enlarge the depictions and characterizations.
Well, I'm glad you did. Now, you want to ask you if you could read a little bit from your book? Would you mind doing that now?
Okay. Sure. I would love to. I'd be happy to. So I'm going to read a very short, it's about a minute or two, excerpt. And this is the very beginning of Angie's experience in Nigeria. So this is the chapter that opens with her literally arriving.
Mm.
Okay?
Yes, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
The first thing Angie noticed about Africa was the smell. The air was redolent with the scent of damp, fresh-turned earth, tropical, and as far away from Detroit as you could get. She walked down the steps of the plane, her first sight of the continent, a stretch of tarmac, and beyond that, a massive glass and stone building, the gleaming, elegant Murtala Muhammad International Airport. A crew of Nigerian workers whizzed by in a dizzying array of gold-patterned shirts, hurling luggage from the belly of the plane onto waiting carts. She inhaled deeply, filling her lungs with the verdant air. Exhaling, she promised herself she would never forget this moment. Inside, the terminal was teeming with people of myriad hues. Erect men stood in long dashiki, beside women in matching lace head wraps and skirts, children scattered throughout, running toward outstretched hands. Two Nigerian pilots passed by, their uniforms crisp and imposing. Angie had never seen a Black pilot in her life, certainly not two. Everywhere she looked, behind ticket counters, at the customs desk, within waiting areas, she saw Black men and women nonchalantly in charge. Even though she knew she was headed to an African country, she hadn't been prepared for this, for dark-skinned men and women moving through a public space with ease and grace. Instantly, she understood her sister Ella's devotion to the Pan-African movement. This was what it was all about, Black people in charge, running their own country. She felt like a girl who had landed in a scene from The Wiz, its Afro-Oz long hidden from view, and now she has found it.
Mm-hmm. She found a lot of things in Nigeria. She found a lot of things. Let's talk about this issue of the smells, I guess, in class. Somehow that connected for me, because her father, the father figure, works as a trainer, as a horse trainer, and you talk about the smells that are there in the stables and what he does. He's very proud of his work. He's like one of the first of his kind to really be established and respected. Yet he has to deal with racism.
Yes.
And his children get to see that. That was a harsh moment. I was like kind of cringing, like, no, are you going to go? I was like, oh, dude, you had to go there. You're going to call him out. You know, like, are you drunk? Is this white man drunk? What are you doing? You know what I mean? I was like, really?
You know, really something. I remember my mother saying to me once, if you ever meet a black man in business for himself, you have met a man who's gone through something. And she said it many years ago, but I think it's still applicable today. And I wanted to show all of it, the tenacity, the vision, the determination, the passion that a black man can have for this thing he wants to do with his life, and then all of the resistance and stress that comes with maintaining or trying to maintain his integrity as he does this thing that he cares about. And in this case, his being a horse trainer meant that he had the responsibility of training the horses of wealthy men who'd spent lots of money purchasing those horses and had high expectations and were, let's face it, often filled with racist beliefs. So it was a way to just really depict the complicated struggles and the success of a man who decided to do this with his life, you know, at a high price, but absolutely it was worth it to him. You know, both things can be true. I know it wasn't an uncomfortable thing, but
I parallel that to your story when you talk about Nigeria, Nigel, and being in Nigeria, and he's around the other white reporters. You know, he's trying to do his thing, and he is telling Angie about how, I don't know if it's him or Brenda, is telling Angie about how the white reporters are going into these towns and basically getting their African on, if you will, you know, trying to sleep with, you know, the African women. And then also the white women coming to these towns and trying to sleep with the black or African men. And then, you know, so it's happening at different places where there's this racism. And then there's also racism towards the black Americans. Like there's some unique, special specimen in Africa because they're black American, you know. But just in terms of the racism happening in Nigeria as well, you know, in a country
where
it's predominantly...
Yeah, I mean, no one escapes it. No one escapes that specter because, after all, it was a colonized country for many years. And so the effects of that still permeate the culture. How could they not, right?
Oh, definitely. And that's, I think, but yet and still, but the part that you just read, Angie is talking about how she was so, I guess, entranced with the black Africans walking very regally, very proudly. And, you know, I thought about that, and I thought about a picture my cousin sent me of my not my grandfather, my great-grandfather. And in the one picture he has on overalls, and he's kind of like slouching a little. So I said, well, you know, he's old. You know, he's an old man or something. And then the other picture, he's wearing a suit. But after reading that sentence, when I thought back to it, I thought how black people have to slouch, if you will, or had to slouch, if you will, for such a long time. They could not walk around with their head high, proud, eye to eye with the dominant culture because then you would be broke down.
At some point in the culture, you know, it was dangerous. They were risking their lives to just walk proudly and look someone in the eye.
It's still dangerous. Hello, Mike Brown, Eric Carter. You know, you're just like, we can't do it. They can't seem to somehow, there's this fear still. There's this, it's absolutely illogical fear. Not you know, there are good and bad people in all cultures. Let me not like, make it like somebody's, you know, totally
But you're making
any,
very
you know,
good
but,
point. You're making a great point, though. I mean, listen, I really recommend that every African-American make it his or her business to travel to the continent at some point in their lives, any country, because you can't understand what it means to have no sort of experience with that kind of submissive way of being that was vital in this country for survival, but that Africans have no understanding of. And so it's a little dissonant, like disconnect feeling when you first see it. You know, like they look like every Black American I know, but they have a whole different sort of way of sort of being in possession of their body. And it's beautiful.
Yeah. And also, if you go to other places to see other types of, if you will, white people, and how other I've been overseas, and how they treat you as a Black American.
Mm-hmm.
That for some Black Americans, feel all white people are bad, they're racist, this and that, you know. And other places, they may or may not be, you know, and that they're just looking at you as a human. You're just a human, like, you know what I mean? And you're Black, and they appreciate all aspects. So there's no, like, not that you're not Black, you know, because I don't like that. I don't like people say I don't see color. I can't say that. I don't like that. That's me. That color made me. I have experiences because of that color. You can't not see my color. Then you're ignoring a part of me. That's just me.
I agree.
So it's important to travel. Yeah, it's important. Mm-hmm. Well, Bridgette, I'm going to be giving away some copies of your book, Into the Go Slow. And, Into the Go Slow, let's talk about the title real quick, okay? Because I had a couple meetings there, too. But Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's funny, that title, I mean, of course you can imagine my editor at Feminist Press was like, really? Do you really need to have that title? And I had to convince her, yes, I want to stick with it. Because it is an unusual title. And people don't immediately know what I'm talking about, what the title means. But I'm hoping that it creates some curiosity and then people open the book and they figure it out. But basically, the term go slow is a term that Nigerians use to describe traffic jams. You know, they're very clever with language. And in their patois, they have all these fabulous expressions. And when I first heard it, I just loved it because that is what happens, you know, when you're in a traffic jam. You go slow. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, this is an amazing metaphor for what I'm trying to say. It's really speaking to what Angie's going through. She's stuck in her life. You know, she's going slow, and she needs to push through that traffic jam in her heart. Right?
Yeah.
Move forward in her life.
So. And also, you mentioned again about going slow in relationships.
That's purposely
to go slow in relationships to build trust. You know, because
exactly. I have her sister write her, the sister Ella, who, you know, dies ultimately. You know, Angie reads all these letters that Ella sent her when she was initially in Nigeria, and she says to her about a relationship, so happy to hear that you're in love, but take my advice, go slow. You caught that, good.
So it was a great read. I would suggest again people read it with the soundtrack. I've tweeted the soundtrack, but also you can go to the Bridgette's website, and it's BridgetteDavis.com / into the go slow, and there she has the soundtrack. It's just awesome. I mean, because I grew up during that time, so for me it's awesome. Other people might be like, what? I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I think I like to think everybody would love it. You know, even people who haven't maybe heard all the songs, it's such great music, right? So great to introduce it to a new audience.
Well, they're spinning it into rap music. These different songs that are playing, they're spinning them into today's rap music. You're at a club, you've heard this. You've heard these songs, and then you'll be like, so if you weren't born during that period, or before, I was born actually before the period, but so as a young adult, I was listening to these songs. But then if you are now, it's in the rap music, and you'll be like, that was the whole song, you know? So don't worry. The book is for young people, if I will say older people, and so who knows what older is, because I could be considered an old woman. But anyway, check Bridgette out on Twitter also, Bridgette M. Davis on Twitter. And again, her website is Bridgette and Data's .com, and there she has the soundtrack and to the book. And I'll be giving away some copies of the book. So you want to follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter. Become a fan on Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Or you can check me out on Instagram. And, again, if you tag me in a photo on Instagram, you could possibly win a book today. Thank you so much, Bridgette, for coming on.
Thank you so much, Joy. And thank you for this. This show, you're doing really important work, and I just want to thank you for it.
Oh, thank you so much. You have a great Saturday. Get out of that car. Get some fresh air.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. All right. Bye.
Thank you, everybody, again, for tuning in. I hope you guys have a wonderful Saturday, a great holiday. This is going to be my last show for the year, so I'll see you guys next year. And you can listen to the archive shows here on Blog Talk Radio, and you can also download them on iTunes. If you just look up Joy Keys, the shows will come up, and you can look them with the title, click on the title, and listen to shows from the last 6 years of me doing this. Again, thank you so much, and I hope you guys have a great Saturday.
Muscle aches, rashes.
To find an answer.
Hair loss. I'm so tired.
You need to ask your doctor the right question.
Could I have lupus?
For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.